We have time for a few questions. There's a microphone in the center of the room, but if you have a big, strong, booming voice, you can stay where you are. Just so long as you identify yourself, please. John?
Gentleman here.
My name is Stephen Thompson. It seems to me you've forgotten something very significant, and that is the sense of the place. I was once talking with a Southern author, and he said to the Northerners, always begin by asking someone what you work at, what's your job. We ask. My ancestors came to this country in the 19th century, and they were 19th century, but currently my wife's ancestors came from the 17th century, Boston, and Maryland. And it is a fact that our identification as an Italian identification is with a particular place. This is the peculiarities, the flavors, the landscape, and the men and women who live in that. And I don't think this is limited by race or ethnicity or culture, something that we all comprehend and understand, perhaps more feeling. Comes from the south, from the southwest, but is present even in such a fascinating place as New York City.
My home, yes. Well, the answer is, of course, you're quite right to say that I did not mention this or perhaps place sufficient attention to it. I certainly recognize it internally because, for example, when one goes to one's the place where one was born and brought up, which in my case is the coast of Lancashire in northwest England, you recognize what, of course, you couldn't recognize when you were a child because you didn't have other experiences. You recognize such things as the character of the sky being somehow different in many subtle ways you can't quite identify there to, for example, in this country. Having said that, the reason I perhaps didn't think of it was threefold. One is I think that I'm over-influenced by my occasional interest in Canadian nationalism, which overemphasizes the landscape, not having anything else to emphasize except social services. Secondly, America is an extremely mobile society, so there's a degree to which the sense of place is probably diluted in many Americans. And thirdly, and I'm not going to suggest that wholly, but I think probably more diluted than in more rooted countries. And thirdly, of course, a sense of place can be a very divisive thing. I mean, there are places over which different nations battle and where the sense of place, far from unifying people, makes them enemies because of it's a place in which tribes contest. But your point, that only explains why I didn't deal with it. Your point is a good one. I should have done. Gentleman here.
Yes, as a Southerner, I sort of share other Southerners' aversion to the culture of some of my ancestors who in Massachusetts hanged priests and cut off Quakers' ears and burned witches and other aspects of the unified culture we might have if we hadn't allowed any diversity in. But I'm troubled by your treatment of a certain group of people who doesn't share this culture, and that is the Spanish-speaking people of the Southwest and of Louisiana and even of Florida, whom you treat as immigrants and who are really the major cultural diversity in our society today. But they are hardly immigrants. They were there before we got there. And it wasn't as if we could have closed the borders and said, we're not going to allow any Mexicans into California or Texas or Louisiana. They were there, and they're not immigrants. And true, they don't have a history of burning witches and cutting off Quakers' ears. They have their own culture. But, I mean, you know, you can't construct an argument against immigrants from them.
Well, as a matter of fact, there are two points there, aren't there? One is that our history, but I would say everybody's history, has got crimes in it. The answer is, do we announce that because there is crimes in our history, that we, in a sense, abandon claims and rights which we might otherwise make? The second point is about the character of the claims and rights. Now, I would say no in the sense of to the previous question. Yes, there are crimes in our past, whatever it is, and obviously there are people in this room who are the descendants of the criminals, and some of the people in the room are the descendants of the people who were offended against. They seem to get to rub along well enough now, and I think that's because there is such a thing as a common culture. If you look at Northern Ireland, where those crimes were committed by one side against another, where in many respects is a common culture, but where there's this huge and important cultural divide based on religion, they're still killing each other now, and they don't look as though they're going to let up anytime soon. So the question one must ask oneself in relation to the non-immigrant Spanish, the people of a different culture in this society, is what do you want them to do for the future? Do you want them to retain those aspects of their culture which will tend to separate them from the rest of society, and which will tend to reduce their economic opportunities as individuals? Or, and if you want that, you must realize you're going to have trouble. And the second, and the point about immigration is this: if you think that it is that immigrants are going to reinforce the likelihood of those people retaining a separate culture and remaining a separate part of the United States, rather than joining in a unified culture, which they themselves would influence, and which has always shown itself extremely accommodating, both to cultural influences from other groups and to the groups themselves. I favor the course which encourages that integration, that assimilation, and on immigration, I think one has to be concerned that the arrival of large numbers of immigrants would strengthen those tendencies to be separate, rather than the tendencies to be united. Gentleman over here.
John, you made reference to the Jameson campaign.
Hello, Jim.
The Mexican Legal Defense Fund. And we have to distinguish between real and organic expressions of immigrant cultures and those which are perhaps people who are being used by, for example, the government legal services, welfare state apparatus, largely a government funded ideological. And I wonder whether those groups who command headlines might be funded by the legal services of Washington, D.C., as opposed to those that are really organic expressions of the real sentiment of the community. And it seems to me that this perhaps Armstrong Williams' speech earlier for Heritage earlier today, he disdained the idea that there is such a thing as Black America, there are Americans. And I think we have a very strong organic culture. And it is the ideological incursions of government funded ideological salience which are creating perhaps a problem which really isn't there.
Well, of course, I think I did say that I thought that organizations like MALDEF did not represent what many Mexican Americans want and believe. They certainly don't. And they represent what the Ford Foundation would like Mexican Americans to want and believe. But the fact is that such organizations, however inadequate the basis of their claim to represent those groups may be, it is a claim that is often accepted by the political and other institutions in this society. And this is a more general problem than one relating either to immigrants or to particular ethnic groups. Generally speaking, it is a liberal establishment which anoints the representatives of various groups. And by the way, one of the biggest failures of the Bush administration in particular, but to some extent of the Reagan administration, was its failure to do a similar job of anointing conservative groups when they had a better claim to represent those groups. So I completely agree with you on that, but I don't. I believe I said it in the speech, and it's unfortunately at the moment those groups are the groups which will be listened to as the representatives, and very often, by the way, the ordinary, let's say, immigrant, Hispanic immigrant, say, will listen to these leaders who don't represent his own views, just as black Americans who are very conservative in all sorts of moral views will often elect leaders who put an entirely different point of view in the national political debate because they're members of a liberal coalition. And that is one of the great, that's a general problem, but in this case, it affects the inability of immigrants who are conservative to get their view across. Well, you can't cut off the money from the Ford Foundation. I mean, I'd like to do that, but, you know, there's only so much I can do. Oh, well, the taxpayer can, but the point is that, unfortunately, the foundations play a major role in this, and we can't control them. The gentleman here.
Yes, I noticed that in your canvassing of the alternative views of what constitutes an American, you seem to offer the prevailing paradigms and how we justify the meaning of being an American, one of which, of course, was you clearly connected being an American to a tradition. That is a body of ideas that look towards the past. But one of the things that you seem to have ignored, which I think is singularly significant, if perhaps not the essence of an American, is constituted out of our Judeo-Christian culture. And as a culture, that particular culture aims towards an aspiration, or perhaps I should say contains an aspiration towards perhaps an indefinite future, i.e. God's plan for man on earth. And that particular aspiration, I think, seems to be a motivation that has connected the disparate groups that have constituted America for many, many years, whether within the Christian body of ideas or clearly, for instance, Mosaic law as well as Christian law, and that most of the groups who come here seem to contain that same aspiration, and that it is the future. I don't want to use the word such as an eschatology, which might suggest some kind of political movement, and therefore the totalitarian implications that go with it. But it does seem to me that part of what being an American is about is a future that we seem to share and in some way or other, even if gropingly, move towards.
It is certainly the case, I think, that Christianity has been overwhelmingly the religion of most Americans throughout its history and continues to be the case today. And it's certainly true that in the terms in which religion was public religion in the United States, it was expressed in terms of a generalized providence, which could include, was basically Judeo-Christian, and could include those kinds of religions which bore some resemblance to Christianity. Now, having said that, which I think I said in the talk again, I don't know that we differ, except that you're suggesting that we could have an endless supply of people who agreed with us on theology, even if they had no other point of connection with us in other cultural terms, which I don't think is realistic.
No, I think part of the problem is that the debate today so often centers around questions of rationalist thought as opposed to Christian or Judeo-Christian principles. And when you gravitate towards a kind of rationalism, I think you're going to inevitably end up with what we call multiculturalism. That is, the identity of a particular group as it understands the reality that it constitutes itself as a group. In other words, it identifies its own reality and therefore can move towards that reality or the perfection of it any way it wishes to. And that's how we end up with a kind of quasi-tribal consciousness in America today.
Well, very briefly, just to pick up something that Ken said, if you remember, he said that the cultural view of American identity was similar in certain respects to Michael Oakeshott's concept of identity, and Oakeshott was saying that in a book which was an attack on rationalism above all else. So I think that the cultural view of American identity is absolved from your critique, but maybe we should talk about this later.
Okay. Again, I sympathize with a lot of your concerns. In the first election that I saw in California, although the Hispanic lobbyists were favoring against or encouraging the voters to vote against English only, 70% of Hispanics voted in favor of English only. Now, unlike yourself, if I understood correctly, who are neither American by chance nor by choice, and I became an American by choice, not by chance, like you people. And, you know, I value what you regard as American culture tremendously. But I don't see a lot of self-examination. You know, when I see the riots in Los Angeles, I see a Rodney King, I see the reaction of policemen, and I see some of the victims, you know, perhaps they spoke with stupid accent like me, and they were the victims, you know, and the barbarians were the citizens of this country, you know. So what is the Hispanic ancestry of Bill Clinton, Rhodes Scholar, Oxford, and all these people, you know? Again, I understand a lot of your concerns, but don't you think you need a little bit more self-examination of what some of the Western people have given to the world, you know, from Hegel to the London School of Economics to Lord Keynes and all this. So, you see, the American ideal is a very dynamic ideal, and an ideal rooted on liberty and freedom, you know, but it's very easy to discriminate, you know. Again, I don't buy any of the bull of the multiculturalists, you know, but the essence of this country is an open society based on freedom. But focus a little bit more on the people who are creating the problem in America, but not so much, you know, on the people who are coming to this country because we value the essence of America.
In the first place, quite a few of the people who were doing the killing were in fact Latino in the Los Angeles riots. Secondly, it's not a question of genetics or of race, it's entirely a question of culture. And when you examine the bad things that that this culture has done, one of them would be, for example, its failure to maintain public order. Now, that failure is twofold, isn't it? One is it fails to socialize people, and the second, in the first instance, and the second is when it has produced unsocialized people, it fails to arrest them, restrain them, and so on. Now, part of the failure to socialize people is it fails to give them a sense of common identity so that they feel that other members of society are their brothers, that they are members one of another. And that is something which we saw exhibited in the Los Angeles riots. And it seems to me very difficult to answer your point because you are essentially suggesting that anybody who wants to maintain a common culture and sees a possible threat to it, both in ideas like multiculturalism, which will tend to break the bonds of society, and also sees that they are fed, or can be fed, they're not in all circumstances fed, by policies of, among other things, more or less unlimited immigration, which will effectively be an incentive for ethnic groups in this country already not to assimilate into the mainstream, but to remain, retain a separate identity over the long run. They are real problems which require real solutions. And it will not do simply to say that because America is a country based on liberty and we believe in being optimistic and consequently we must, we cannot seriously examine these questions because we're going to offend people. We've got to talk candidly about them, because our failure to talk candidly about them, lest we offend people, displaying a sensitivity which is perfectly proper in private relations but completely out of place in public debate, has led to a situation in which the wrong policies have been pursued, and in which or no policies have been pursued at all, and we have to be perfectly candid about this. Now, I really don't think I can go beyond that, though I'm happy to talk about it later.
I'm Larry Auster. I don't really have a question, John, but a comment regarding this idea of representation, that the Hispanic groups do not represent the Hispanic population and so on. I think that's a false argument in the sense indicated by Eric Voegelin in New Science of Politics, where he talks about different types of representation, elemental representation, existential representation. For example, the Soviet government was not elected in a democratic representational way by its people, yet it certainly represented that country and that government, and its actions were taken as such. In the same way, as you pointed out, the Hispanic organizations are taken as representing the Hispanic agenda and so forth. Well, I guess I'll leave it there, but think of one example. In Dade County, back in the early 80s, in English only, meaning English, official English for government activities, statute was passed. This was one of the first ones in the country. A few months ago, or last year, as the population of Dade County had become overwhelmingly Hispanic, and the county supervisors had become overwhelmingly Hispanic, that law became the first official English law in the country to be overturned. So whether or not we think in some theoretical sense that these groups represent the groups, what they desire is what is happening. And I don't think it's a fruitful way of looking at it to keep saying, well, they don't represent them in some perfect sense, because in essence they do represent. We may say that the people of Haiti have not been perfectly represented or democratically represented by the kind of governments they've had. Yet consistently over 200 years, that's the kind of government that culture has produced. In the same way, the Hispanic culture may tend to produce exactly the kind of leadership that it does have today.
Well, I don't know that we disagree about the fact that the representation of these groups is, in a democratic sense, false, but is real in the sense that they are taken by institutions of government and others to be their spokesmen, and therefore their views are the views which tend to be enter legislation, influence public debate, and so on. I think that is a problem. It's the problem that Jim Campaign raised. It's a wider problem. It goes well beyond the ethnic group representation, because in a whole series of ways in our society, the groups which speak for various people do not, in fact, represent what those people think. And the most dramatic case, I think, is the failure of many black politicians, most really, to represent the moral convictions of the people who elect them. But having said that, and stated the problem, I don't know that one can say more, except that if you're realistic about it, you will see that in making judgments about future policy, that you cannot rely on the mere Burke made this distinction a long time ago between mere opinion and organized opinion. Mere opinion is what the ordinary, let us say, Mexican immigrant feels. It's what you and I feel when we're watching television. But organized opinion is what the pressure groups manage to manufacture, and it is the pressure groups, and it is organized opinion, which tends to dominate policy making. So I just have to say that, but I think we agree, don't we?